ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good morning and welcome to AM. It's Friday the 13th of March. I'm Melissa Clark in Canberra, coming to you from Ngunnawal country and acknowledging other custodians. First to the Middle East, Iran's new supreme leader has not been seen or heard from since being elected 5 days ago. But overnight, a first statement from Mojtaba Khamenei was read on Iranian television, which indicated Iran would continue to block the Strait of Hormuz and keep attacking neighbouring Gulf countries. Global Affairs correspondent Laura Tingle is in Dubai. Laura, what was his main message?
Well, his main message was that Iran would use the power it's got to keep the Strait of Hormuz closed as leverage against the United States and Israel. And of course, they've been really ramping up attacks in the Gulf in the last 24 hours. About six oil ships have been hit and more production facilities and ports have been closed down. So about 20% of the world's oil supply is currently not getting through.
And what about the message for neighbouring countries?
Well, I've seen various translations of it. Some have suggested that he wants to have friendly relations with neighbouring countries, but the big proviso of that is that he's saying that all US bases in the region have to be closed, and in the meantime, Iran will continue to attack them. So given that they're in the neighbouring countries, he's suggesting that they will continue to be under attack.
What does that mean for Australia? Because obviously Australia has a military presence at some of these military bases around the region. Does that pose a particular concern for Australia?
Well, I think it has to raise the question, Mel. Our biggest sovereign base outside Australia is here in the United Arab Emirates. We've got a permanent base here that we share with a number of other countries, which is hosted by the UAE. Now, we're not a direct combatant in this, but that base has already been under attack during this war. And, you know, you've got to ask yourself, you know, is it likely that there may be more attacks, given that, for example, a British base has also been attacked in the last 24 hours in Iraq by Iranian drones?
What about what we're hearing from the Iranian side? The President Pezeshkian has been laying down terms for peace at the same time. Take me through that.
Yes, he's laid down three terms for peace, which I think are basically not going to be acceptable to anybody, which includes reparation for the damage done to Iran during the war and a commitment to not engage any further hostilities. So I'm not thinking that that's going to go a long way, Mel, at this point in time.
Mojtaba Khamenei has taken on the role as the supreme leader in Iran, but this is his first statement, and we haven't actually seen him yet. Why is that? Why are we only getting a written statement at this point? Does that tell us anything about his health or his presence, or is this a strategic move?
Well, you could argue that there's a good reason why we don't see him, Mel, given that the Americans and the Israelis have vowed to kill him, and they've been pretty successful at knocking off most of the senior figures in the regime. Amongst the people, of course, that they've killed are his father and other members of his family, variously speculated as being his mother, his wife, and some or all of his children. So, one, there's a question about whether he wants to be seen in public, but two, there's a separate question of, is he actually alive or is he very badly wounded? Now, there's quite a lot of speculation to that effect. I think the reports are that Israeli intelligence believe that he is alive, but he has been wounded. So there is a question about how much capacity he has at the moment to actually act as supreme leader. And I think this statement read out by a news anchor on Iranian television will only feed that speculation in the next few days and weeks.
Laura Tingle in Dubai. While the federal government here insists the nation's fuel supply remains secure, rising costs and panic buying are contributing to a surge in prices and some shortages, especially in regional areas. With the Middle East conflict exposing the fragility of global supply chains, the government is under pressure to insulate Australia from further price shocks if the crisis worsens. Political reporter Samantha Dick has the story. With fuel prices hitting more than $2.50 a litre in parts of Australia and the Middle East conflict showing no sign of abating, the government is feeling the heat.
Can you guarantee Australia will not run out of fuel?
Resume your seat.
Energy analyst Tony Wood from the Grattan Institute says the government is facing a big problem.
Energy is significantly political.
Energy Minister Chris Bowen insists supply is not the problem driving high prices.
So when we say our fuel supply is secure, we mean it because it is true. It can also be the case that in regional areas in particular, when you see a doubling of demand in 10 days, then there are shortages.
Romy Kerry, Chief Executive of the Northern Territory Cattlemen's Association, says access to fuel is critical for the survival of Australia's livestock and agricultural industries.
There is a nervousness around, you know, whether or not there will be fuel tomorrow, and that's what is causing people to get to the bowser and panic buy.
Tony Wood says the International Energy Agency's decision to release an unprecedented 400 million barrels of oil from emergency stocks demonstrates the scale of the crisis.
So, of course, it makes a lot of sense for the government, in particular Minister Bowen, to say, look, we think we're okay, we're better than we've been for a long time, but the world is now a less reliable place, if you like.
In recent decades, the number of oil refineries in Australia has fallen from 8 down to 2. They're in Geelong and Brisbane, where some of the emergency stockpile is refined and stored. Other supplies are maintained at import terminals near ports. Tony Wood says an increasingly unstable world order should prompt the federal government to have a serious think about extending Australia's fuel storage.
You've got to work out how much do you want to pay for what level of insurance against pretty remote events.
Flavio Macau, a global supply chains expert at Edith Cowan University, says regional Australians won't just be feeling the pinch at the bowser, they'll be feeling it at supermarket checkouts too.
You have to move those products for a longer distance as you go regional, which will require more diesel. And then as diesel prices go up, it will have even a stronger effect on your supermarket basket.
As a short-term measure to help regional Australians, the government is boosting supplies of fuel by temporarily relaxing quality standards for 2 months, pouring 100 million litres of fuel with a higher sulphur content each month into the domestic market. That fuel will be blended into Australia's normal supply for the next 60 days instead of being exported. Tony Wood says the impact on drivers will be minimal.
Samantha Dick there. The Middle East conflict is also having a significant impact in some of the world's most remote villages. Gulf countries like the UAE have far more foreign workers than citizens, and that expatriate population includes many young men from South Asian villages working blue-collar jobs. At least 13 civilians have been killed in Gulf countries in this conflict, most of them foreign workers. South Asia Bureau Chief Meghna Bali travelled to a remote Himalayan village in Nepal to meet the family of one of them.
I'm on a bumpy car ride from Nepal's capital Kathmandu, heading into the mountains. The distance is only about 100 kilometres, but it takes 7 hours to reach the village of Borlang. Narrow roads wind along steep hillsides, where landslides are common and jobs are scarce. It's the kind of place many young men leave behind, hoping to find work overseas. I've come here to meet the Shrestha family. As I walk into their mud brick home, I hear wailing. Pavitra Shrestha is mourning her only son, Debas. They killed my precious son, she cries. 29-year-old Debas Shrestha was working near Abu Dhabi's Zayed International Airport. On the second day of the conflict, an Iranian missile was intercepted above the city, but falling debris struck and killed him.
It has been really painful to lose my only son.
This is his father, Jambahadur Shrestha.
I saw news that 3 people, a Nepali, a Pakistani and a Bangladeshi, had been killed in the attack. The media showed a photo of the Nepali victim. It wasn't my son. But then we received his body. I had no words. I could not speak.
Like hundreds of thousands from Nepal, Debas left home for work in the Gulf, where half the region's 60 million population is made up of migrant workers.
The economies of these countries are structurally dependent
on labour coming from South Asia, India, Southeast Asia and East Africa.
This is migrant rights expert Usman Javed. He says most migrants do physically demanding, often essential jobs, and live in crowded accommodation, which can make them more vulnerable during attacks.
Blue-collar workers, they get paid less, they have poorer living accommodations. If you have a rocket exploding overhead and debris falls, and if you're living in accommodation that is not as well protected as, you know, well-made houses are, then, yeah, you are more at risk.
Dibas worked night shifts as a security guard. It was far from home, but his father tells me the wages were far better than anything he could earn in his village.
He used to tell us, don't panic about running household expenses. I'll do better.
Dibas is one of at least 10 South Asian workers killed in the Gulf since the conflict began 2 weeks ago. And millions of migrant workers remain in the Gulf, many with little way out. This is Meghna Bali reporting for AM.
Severe flooding in parts of northern Australia continues, with extra emergency teams deployed to communities in Queensland and the Northern Territory. As the worst floodwaters in almost three decades recede, Northern Territory residents and business owners have begun assessing the widespread damage as some struggle to access emergency relief payments. Kathleen O'Connor reports.
After 6 days stuck at a caravan park in Katherine in the Northern Territory, owner Bronwyn Trebin has finally been able to leave.
Each day we haven't been able to get out, checking the causeway, loaded up the car, brought everybody in to Woolworths to get medication, shopping, etc. So the Tyndall Creek is very fast flowing, but we can drive through it.
Ms Trebin was trapped with more than 100 of her cattle and around 40 residents after floodwaters surrounded her property.
We're right on the banks of the Katherine River, so the water came up around the back of all the caravan park, like lapping at the back of our fence line of our caravan park. It went through the fence line a couple of places.
Parts of Katherine have already started to reopen. Immediate relief payments of around $600 per adult and $300 per child have been made available to residents in some parts. However, those queuing for the payments waited hours, only to be told to come back the next day. Meanwhile, in northern Queensland, residents and business owners assess the damage to their properties. Victoria Pomfret is a business owner in Bundaberg. She's no stranger to floods.
Bursting into tears yesterday. You know what, doesn't kill you, makes you stronger. And I've been through three, I can do it again.
Meanwhile, resident Alan Bennion is assessing the damage to his home. He's lived there for 50 years.
Well, we're hoping it wouldn't quite get as high as the 2010-11 flood, but it just got in, just enough to be a pain.
Police have also identified two Chinese tourists who were found dead in floodwaters after they were swept off the road. They were 23 and 27 years of age. Grant Marcus is the Chief Inspector of Queensland Police in Bundaberg.
On Sunday, they were meant to leave Brisbane and go to Mundubbera. They were here to do fruit picking and their intention was to go to Mundubbera to do fruit picking. They didn't arrive and a friend of theirs from here in Australia contacted police on the Tuesday and reported them as missing. Their vehicle was found on Wednesday near Kilkeven, in that Kilkeven area. It was submerged at the time. It looks like the vehicle has driven off a bridge into flooded waters, which is really sad to see.
In Bundaberg, a woman trapped by floodwaters had to be airlifted to hospital after she was bitten by a snake. Meanwhile, authorities remain on high alert, with flooding expected to peak in some areas tomorrow.
Kathleen O'Connor. Since 2020, the New South Wales government has purchased more than a dozen large outback properties across the state's west. It's been a significant expansion for conservation, but local farmers are concerned what it might mean for the future of their grazing communities. Bill Ormond reports from Western New South Wales.
It's business as usual for 33-year-old grazier Sam Bevan as he musters a herd of black cattle 70 kilometres north of Broken Hill. Watching on are Sam's three young boys and his heavily pregnant wife Erin. For Sam, raising a family here at Sturt's Meadow Station has always been his dream.
I love working with sheep, working with cattle. I love animals, always have loved animals. Absolutely everything about it is just so appealing to me.
He hopes one day his sons will have the opportunity to run their own stations, but he's not so sure. In recent years, things have changed. Since 2020, the state government has purchased 16 large outback properties in the region. It's cost them around $200 million, but it's meant an area more than four times the size of the ACT has been converted into national parks. Sam Bevan and many other graziers say these acquisitions threaten their future.
To have the land value just skyrocket the way it has is a bit frightening when it comes to, you know, can we expand? We're about to have four kids. What if they all want to take over? We can't buy another property somewhere. We can't make this one bigger. How do we deal with this?
National parks say commodity prices and inflation are the reason the value of rural land has doubled here and across the state since 2020. On the other side of this story is local national parks area manager Jamie Norris. He says he understands the impact of farming on rural communities and the concerns graziers have about the new parks.
The only way for Western New South Wales to be successful is to have very healthy mining, tourism and grazing industries. And in that tourism space, the National Park Service play a really integral, important role.
Jamie believes removing livestock from some land benefits the environment.
Where you're able to remove that grazing pressure, particularly from hard-hoofed animals, then you can derive great environmental benefit. That can't be achieved through the continued practice of grazing. And there needs to be conservation outcomes in the broader landscape that can coexist with the pastoral industry.
That's National Parks Area Manager Jamie Norris, ending that report by Bill Ormond. Kids and adults in the small town of Brewarrina in rural New South Wales say a youth program there is making a big difference in social outcomes. The organisation running it was co-founded by NRL superstar Latrell Mitchell. He says children in isolated communities deserve support and guidance. Manyo Bobo reports.
In the outback town of Brewarrina in northwest New South Wales, Darnell Heatherall loves being a cadet with the Rural Fire Service.
Yeah, it's a wonderful feeling. Ever since a kid, I wanted to obviously be like RFS and Fire Brigade, so I wanted to get into it young, and I got the opportunity back when I don't know if I was either 13 or 14, but after getting that opportunity to be an RFS member, I went for it and chased my dream.
Now 17, Darnell says before he started the cadetship, he needed guidance, and he got that through the Winmara Foundation's Emerging Leaders Program.
I don't know where I would be, to be honest. It kind of shaped me in ways. It shaped me to obviously be a leader more and obviously build my resilience and everything. So it definitely has shaped me in many ways.
The Winmara Foundation offers the program to both at-risk and high-achieving children in Brewarrina, giving guidance and support to steer them towards positive life choices. And it was co-founded by one of the country's most famous sports stars.
South scoop it up, pass it to Latrell on the edge, and Mitchell goes in to score for South.
When Latrell Mitchell isn't out there scoring tries, you can find him running this program in Brewarrina.
Seeing these kids go from, you know, not being able to say their name or too shame or too shy, to be able to know who they're from, express who they are, who their mob, you know, what their dreams are at. You know, especially the boys, but now we've got the girls that come into it. It makes my heart warm.
Resident Barbie Lee Kirby was born and raised in Brewarrina.
I think the closest regional town to us is Dubbo, and that's roughly 4-hour drive away. We lack pathways opportunities. We don't have weekend sport in the same way other communities have.
She says the community overwhelmingly supports the foundation because of the impact it's had on young people.
The kids who are involved in the Winmara program have stepped into this leadership that, you know, the community is so proud to see.
Latrell Mitchell, who also comes from a regional town, says young people deserve support.
And just give them a bit of time, you know, because you just never know what that kid's going through or anyone in that aspect, I suppose. So for me, it's all about the smiles of the kids, and that's why I love it so much.
NRL champion Latrell Mitchell there, Manio Bobo reporting. And that's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Melissa Clark.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley here, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. Did the US president entirely misjudge what the Iran war would entail and how significant the ripple effects would be across the globe? Today's staff writer at The Atlantic magazine, Tom Nichols, on why the Trump administration is strategically incompetent and why he thinks the president is suffering from victory disease. Look for the ABC News Daily Podcast on ABC Listen.